And of course, our guest, Preston Dennett, as we talk about UFO and its healing power and also submerged UFOs. We're going to take some of your calls, too, when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Preston Dennett with us. Preston, what kind of proof are we getting after the healing?
Well, what's interesting is, you know, medical evidence can literally make or break a UFO case. Sometimes it's all the evidence we have. And so UFO healings actually can represent some really outstanding evidence. And there are several cases that I found which have really good evidence. One was investigated by Bill Hamilton, and he was able to get before and after x-rays, which showed that this lady who has not gone public, she uses a pseudonym, but she is a lifelong experience, and she was suffering from a cyst in her breast, and she was actually going to have it removed. And basically, like, I believe it was the day before she was going to have her operation, she had an experience in her bedroom, which she doesn't really fully recall other than that something happened. And she had been having some close-up sightings recently as well. And she went to the doctor, and they were not able to find the cyst. It was as if it had just disappeared. And Bill Hamilton was able to get the before and after x-rays, which showed that this thing was gone. So there are, these are the types of cases which are, like, hard to ignore.
What does mainstream medicine, though, say about it? I mean, do they jump up and down and admit it, or do they deny it?
I think mainstream medicine is baffled for many reasons, often because they're not being told the complete truth. Here's one case I investigated with a very similar to the one I just told you. This lady had a cyst and also experienced a visitation very, very close to her operation date. And she went back to the doctor, and they're like, well, this is odd. There's fluid here that's only present if you have had surgery. Have you had surgery recently? And this lady, I'll call her Wendy, she's like, no, I have not. And she knew that she probably had, but it was aboard a UFO, and she was not about to admit it. And the doctor was really puzzled, and he started examining her more closely, and it pointed to this part of her body near her belly button. He's like, well, there's a laser scar. Where did you get that? And she says, I've never had surgery. And he says, well, obviously you have, because here's the proof. And that really freaked out the witness and the doctor. So I think that, you know, mainstream medicine is having a difficult time with this.
Well, here's a paradox too, Preston. I mean, millions of people die every year from all kinds of ailments, diseases, heart attacks, cancer, you name it. They're not saved. They're not cured. Why not?
Right, right. I think, you know, this is a really difficult question, and it's hard to say, but I think the aliens are wiser than to just go ahead and give us healing technology for one thing, or to start curing everybody. Because clearly, we can't even get along with each other. And that would very likely have a devastating effect on humanity. We're just not ready for it. Imagine what would happen if our military got a hold of this healing technology. They would just equip them, you know, start curing soldiers. Send them out of the field, let their limbs get blown off, bring them back, stitch them up, send them back out. This is not something that would necessarily be, you know, good for us. So I think that they're doing it on a very limited basis. It's hard to say why some people are getting healed and others. But you know, I think one of the reasons that's holding back official open contact for that, you know, reason is our own hostilities.
Maybe so. Let's take some calls here. First time caller, Joe in Palm Desert. That's in California. Hi, Joe. Welcome to the show.
Oh, nice to be with you. Yeah, first-time caller. Great show tonight.
Super.
Preston, I got a question for you. You were talking about the underground bases just off the coast near the Catalina Islands. And do you remember when there was a missile launch a few years ago right off the coast there?
That's
and it
right.
Just kind of, yeah, it just kind of struck me. Is there a correlation that you maybe have come up, you know, what's that you might think has something to do with the underground base? And I'll take the answer offline.
All right, you got it. Remember that case?
I sure do. I saw it. I was here. It was very interesting because it certainly didn't look like a plane contrail, which was apparently, you know, that official explanation.
Sure. And then some thought, maybe a Chinese missile.
Yeah, and what's interesting is this is that exact area, so it's hard to say, you know, but I do think the military is aware of this. And it's hard for me to believe that they wouldn't be.
There's probably nothing they can do about it, Preston.
Well, here's another interesting thing is this is the same area where they started doing some very heavy-duty sonar tests and experiments. And it got to be so bad that it was damaging the marine life, and there was a whole protest over it, and it went to court.
Right, I remember that.
And so, you know, why there? You know, why in this exact area is my question. You know, are they looking for something? Are they investigating something? We don't know, but I think there is more evidence. In fact, some of the evidence I think that there's a underground base there or underwater base comes from an abduction case, which took place on Catalina Island in Avalon Harbor, actually.
What happened?
It's a really interesting case involving a doctor, actually, and his friend. He's a doctor now. At the time, he was just a kid. And they had an episode of missing time. And he always thought it was very, very peculiar. He couldn't convince anybody, but he and his friend knew that something very unusual had happened to them. And it was until years later that they heard about UFO abductions and missing time and having had some prior experiences. After that, he decided to go visit Yvonne Smith, who's a well-known Southern California hypnotic regressor who works with these types of cases. And he uncovered an abduction case, which is not your typical case. And that's what's interesting about some of the cases I'm uncovering in this area. When you're normally, go under hypnosis, often you'll recall being taken aboard a UFO, or you find yourself in this room with rounded walls on a table, this type of thing. And if this is not what he saw, it wasn't gray type aliens either. What he saw was rock walls. And he said he was surrounded by these praying mantis more looking or bug looking type of figures. He says it wasn't a scary experience, not for him. They weren't hurting him. And they appeared to be more interested in his friend than him. And in fact, most of the time he just sat there on a kind of a bench. But he said where he was taken was a large room. It was not inside any type of a craft that he perceived. It had rough rock walls. So where was this? It's hard to say, but the fact that he was taken from Avalon Harbor, which is a very tight little harbor there on Catalina Island, which is, 26 miles out there. Hard to say.
All right, let's go back to the phones. We'll go to Klamath Falls, Oregon. Jack. Welcome to the show. Hey, Jack.
Hey, how are you guys doing
today? Good, Jack.
Good. I wanted to introduce a theory to you guys that I have. And it has to do with the fact that if we were possibly seeded by extraterrestrial being, the fact that maybe Atlantis is their base that they left here, and they left it here so that they can monitor our progress as we go along. Because rather than traveling all the way through space to get here all the time, why not just leave the base here? So the UFOs that we see are actually not coming from outer space, but they're actually coming from Atlantis underneath the water. And so that's why everybody sees USOs and UFOs. And maybe they're hiding out down there, and because, when you're monitoring, you're not supposed to interact so much.
What do you think of that, Preston?
Well, I think that's actually a pretty good idea. I think that to a large extent, that's what we got going on. We know that these things have been around forever. And while activity did jump up really heavily in the late 1940s, kind of coinciding with the atomic era there, these UFOs have been around, and we've got the evidence for it. And one of the things that's always bugged me with skeptics is they say, oh, the stars are too far away. Well, we don't know that these ETs are coming from other stars. Like Jack says, they could very well have had these bases from ever.
Sure.
As far as we know.
Some think that they may have already been part of the planet. A more advanced race.
Yeah, it's possible. It's definitely possible. Like we were talking about earlier, it's baffling to find cases where people are describing ETs that look just like us.
I like the fact that maybe they came from other planetary systems, don't you? To me, that's got more excitement to it.
Yeah, I think we come from a planet, so it's hard for me to believe that we're that different from, other people. And I'm always kind of leery of theories that put us too much at the center. of, you know, the whole universe. I think these UFOs are pretty thick out there, actually, and we're just a very, very small part of what's going on.
Next up, we're going to Barry in Washington, and Bassam is with us. Hey, Bassam, welcome.
Hi, how are you, Joe?
Good, thank you.
Good.
A question. I'm a scientist. I've been observing the skies, and I talked to you earlier, maybe a couple weeks ago, and I see every now and then formations that look like clouds, but they're not really clouds. They look like cloak shapeshifters.
Yes.
They defy every dynamic movement in the sky. They turn into lights. They make shapes. Is there any relationship between unidentified submerged objects and UFOs and this phenomenon that I called unidentified cloud cloak objects or shapeshifters?
That's a great question. You know, almost every movie has some kind of cloud formation that bursts open with a UFO behind it. Almost all of them. What about in real life, Preston? What do we hear? Other than, remember Chicago O'Hare Airport? The right. Donut hole?
Right. Well, you know, there are a lot of cases where UFOs are cloaked in clouds. You know, there was a case I talked to a gentleman in Costa Mesa, and it was a very large cloud. Lots of people saw this object, and it had little lights going all around it. Number of cases like that, and certainly there are a lot of cases where UFOs generate fog or mist, and this is often how, you know, abduction cases will start. People will drive into this wall of fog that should not be there. So apparently UFOs, and I think that this does relate to some extent to the underwater UFO phenomena, these UFOs have the ability to control weather to a certain extent, or, you know, if they can control fog and things like this. This speaks to how they can dive in and out of the water. They clearly have a technology that's way beyond ours, and which, you know, is evident in these UFO healing cases. Their understanding of the electromagnetic spectrum is so far beyond ours. With these lights that can levitate people, they can communicate with people, they can paralyze people, they can cause amnesia. These lights they have can do all kinds of things that we just don't understand at this point.
What's your guess on where they're coming from?
My guess is they're coming from other planets. I think the whole Zeta Reticula thing is probably, there's some evidence that that's true. I've certainly heard it enough times from a number of witnesses. Orion has been named, Andromeda. You know, it's so hard to say because often the ETs will give a very coy or evasive answer. This couple I interviewed in Arizona, I investigated their abduction case, which they said was actually not really an abduction case at all. They were invited aboard this craft. It was very friendly. The ETs were very human-looking and said that they can't interfere too much, but they do want to help people who are helping humanity. And these two people were kind of hands-on healers and doing herbal remedies and things like this. So maybe that was why they had this encounter. But they asked the ETs, well, where do you come from? And the ETs gave an answer that I've heard, you know, before, which was, oh, we come from a place you don't know about yet.
Well, that's possible.
Which is, yeah, it's true, but it's kind of evasive. Or, you know, that's not important to you. Or they, you know, kind of change the subject. And that's if they talk at all. For the most part, you know, ETs are not what I would call loquacious.
Okay, back we go. Let's go to Dexter in Baltimore, Maryland, east of the Rockies. Hello, Dexter.
Hey, George, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Well, let me say it's an honor to talk to you, and your work has really inspired my life, man.
Thanks, Dexter.
I've had a big change, and Coast to Coast has a big part to do with it. Let me ask your guest about James Cameron. Are you there?
Mr. Titanic.
Yes, yes, James Cameron. He did Titanic, he did Aliens, he did Avatar, The Abyss, The Terminator, and he recently, and it was in the news, he did a deep underwater dive to one of the most deep places in the entire ocean. And I'm just wondering if your guest has any idea of what's going on with that. I mean, I wonder if there's a Illuminati influence on him going down there and seeing certain things so that he can portray it to the general public in a way that we can understand. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think I get what you're saying, Dexter. No, I can't really speak too much to that because, I don't know, but clearly something has inspired him, and I think when people are really successful.
He's been on the show before. We'll probably get him on again, Dexter. I'll ask him that. I think the guy's a genius, Preston.
Oh, yeah. He's clearly extremely creative and hugely successful and has done very well. And I certainly enjoyed his movies.
Very creative guy. Very creative guy.
Yeah, he's one of those people who's lucky to be able to throw some money and do some real interesting things, you know. And so it's nice to see that he's following his dreams.
What percent of what you do is made up of UFO activity?
Well, I wish it were 100%. I do have to work full time as a bookkeeper to pay the bills.
Got to pay the bills.
I do make a little bit of money with my books, but it's just enough to support my UFO hunting habit. And, I try to spend as much as I can dividing my time, between writing about this subject and interviewing people. But I'm always working on new cases. So I really, really enjoy it. It's something I, have had a passion for God, now 25 years, I think.
25 years?
So, it's really something that's taken over my life a little bit. But, I enjoy it. My family has been very supportive. I get a lot of witnesses sent my way from this whole network of family and friends and coworkers.
What seems to be for you the most fascinating aspect of your UFO investigations?
Most fascinating for me is I tried to get as close as to the phenomena as I could. I really could not believe it. I was talking to the people, and I just could not believe what they were telling me. I could not believe the books I was reading. I really wanted to see a UFO for myself. And that's the most fascinating part, because I've actually been successful in seeing, I'm going to say, 10 UFOs. And some of them were some really dramatic sightings. And mind you, I had never had a sighting growing up, never had a sighting before I got involved in this. But either the ETs turned the tables or something happened. I found out where they are. I found the people who were seeing them, when they were seeing them. And I was able to have some really interesting sightings.
All right, well, we're going to take this break in just a moment here, Preston. We're going to come back and take some more phone calls with you as we talk about recent underwater UFO activity, specifically off the coast of California, and also your story about evidence for UFO healings of illnesses of folks from colds to cancer. That's pretty fascinating. So those of you on hold, don't worry. You'll lose your place in line, and we don't want that to happen to you. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, don't forget, if you're a Coast Insider and your renewal is coming up, make sure your account information is all current so you don't go through some kind of hassle. We're going to come back in just a moment with Preston Dennett, and I'll tell you what, we'll take your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Preston Dennett with us. Preston, are there any other countries that are monitoring these USO cases?
Countries, I think that all the countries, at least the major countries, are monitoring UFO activity on a pretty regular basis, and that includes USO activity. And I'm not sure how well it's being monitored, but definitely there are aspects of our government who are watching this whole situation very closely, I think.
Is there a country more advanced than we are in terms of research and investigating?
That's hard to say. I don't think so. I think the U.S. is probably pretty up there. But certainly, there's the superpowers, and everyone is looking into this. We know that. We're not the only ones who have crashed UFOs, and we have our share of them. But other countries have them as well. So they know about this technology. They know about this phenomena. There is an active cover-up. It's demonstrable, I think. And, it's crumbling, thank God. I think eventually it's going to end. It's inevitable.
You're also a ghost hunter.
Yes. Yeah, that was another thing I got dragged into, kind of kicking and screaming. But
you wrote a book, Ghosts of Greater Los Angeles, right?
That's right. Yep. I didn't want to investigate ghosts, but it turned out a lot of the people I was interviewing, I'd ask them open-ended questions like, have you had any other unexplained experiences?
I'm going to open up the phones next hour to also ghost questions for you.
Oh, good.
I mean, what do you think that is? Is it just another dimension? What is it?
Absolutely. I think that there are other dimensions, and we can experience that ourselves, and certainly we've proven it with physics. But certainly having dreams and out-of-body experiences and this whole thing, I think is very good evidence that there are other dimensions and that we ourselves are interdimensional beings, if you will, which is something, you know, people always will describe ETs as because of the things they can do. But absolutely, there's a weird connection, I think, too, between ghosts and UFOs, but it's loose and hard to define, and I can't quite pinpoint it.
What a fascinating universe, though, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It is fascinating.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. We'll go to Ketchikan, Alaska, west of the Rockies. It's Dave's turn. David, go ahead.
Oh, good evening, gentlemen. Long-time listener, started back in the 80s, and I'm also a Ghost Insider.
Super. Thanks on all fronts.
I was working on a ship, and I don't want to name the ship, but I was up on helm. That means I was steering the ship. It was late night, 12:30, maybe 1 in the morning, right in there. Moonless night, is very dark, and way off in the distance, I could see a little light. And I had asked the lieutenant, you know, hey, you know, we've got an object up there. And he looked, and he goes, ah, it's a star. There's nothing on radar. I said, our radar's already set out for 100 miles. There's nothing there. And I kept watching it and watching it and watching it for about 10 minutes, and all of a sudden, it started to get a little brighter and larger. And I went, wow, look. And as he turned, it just came right at us. It was about the size of a house. And it came within 30 feet of the ship and shot straight up into the air.
Did you see any texture to it?
It was real bright. It was hurting our eyes. We couldn't really. But then it turned around after it shot up into the sky and went down. It went into the water.
Yeah.
Wow.
It didn't slow down, nor did it make a splash. That I just don't understand how it didn't make a splash. So I told the lieutenant, I says, how are you going to mark that down in the logbook? and he says, I'm not putting anything down. I didn't see anything. And I says, what do you mean? That thing almost hit us, whatever it was. And he says, nothing. We didn't see nothing, and I started arguing with him.
Denial, denial, denial.
He left real quick, and he came right back up about, you know, half a minute, and the captain was with him. The captain stood there, looked around out the windows, and he says, I don't see nothing. Clear night. We didn't see anything, and he came up, and he just, you know, face to face right at me, and he says, nothing happened. Do you understand?
Wow.
Man, he was either so used to it or he was just petrified about his own career.
I wonder, because it makes you wonder how many of similar cases have sort of gone unrecorded. And I remember one gentleman I talked to who was a medic on a ship, and he said a very similar story. And they said, we're watching these lights, and they made an announcement over the loudspeaker, pay no attention to the orange lights on the horizon. So... it's hard to say.
Well, you know, a lot of pilots, same thing. You know, a lot of pilots have seen things, and they just don't want to report it. You know, they figure, you know, it's not going to do them any good, and people think, you know, they're drunk. What's wrong with them?
Yeah, it's unfortunate. You know, I'd really like to know about these cases. I think that we could learn a lot. And, you know, that type of behavior from a UFO jumping up out of the water and coming towards the ship is very, you know, brazen. These things are trying to be noticed. Now, they're putting out a little display. It's almost like they're playing with us, kind of cat and mouse a little bit.
When you start to investigate a case, Preston, how do you start?
Well, the first thing I try to do is determine the extent of it. Often it's just a distant sighting, but sometimes suddenly you find out that there are corroborating witnesses, and a distant sighting can turn out to be an abduction for someone else. Or, you know what I mean, a more extensive case. So good example is the whole Topanga Canyon wave, which started out as just a couple of sightings and turned out to be, you know, pretty much the biggest investigation I've ever followed. And I get really excited, you know, when I can get, you know, more than one witness and I can go to a
sure
landing trace. It's very, very, very rare to get any kind of landing trace cases.
In the old days, we used to have a lot of those.
Yeah.
Tripod like types. Then something happened. They went away.
I've only seen a couple, but they were certainly compelling, you know, rings on the ground and things like this, crushed grass. And certainly I've, you know, done some research into medical evidence and seen, you know, the scars on people that they attribute to experiences they've had aboard UFOs. So there is evidence out there, and the, you know, the implant evidence is extraordinary. So the evidence is in the public arena, just willing to be examined by anyone with the guts to look at it.
Randy is in Santa Monica, California, first-time caller. Hey, Randy, good morning.
Hey, George. How you doing today?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Great. Hey, Preston.
Hi.
I'm a fisherman right out of King Harbor. We go out at night catching sand bass, and we see these things. I mean, it's common. They're always traveling north. We're only in 65 to 70 feet of water, and they travel right under our boat sometimes. And we just grab onto the side of the boat and hold our breath because I'm thinking if they surface, we're goners. But my girlfriend has actually seen them off the coast of Palos Verdes all the time. And I haven't been with her when she's seen them, but when we go fishing right out of King Harbor, I mean, just off the coast, they're huge. We're in like a 17-foot aluminum boat, and some of these things are like 10 times the width of the boat, and they're like a green luminescence.
Wow.
And they travel right under the boat sometimes, and it's really scary.
Gosh, that's weird. Yeah.
How many times would you say you've seen that?
Some of them are small, but one or two of them that have passed right under the boat are huge.
Wow.
And we're in really kind of shallow water, but it's common. I mean, they're pretty common out there. And they're always traveling north. We've never seen one going, like, toward Venice, south. They're always going up toward, like, Palos Verdes area. But that's my experience with those things. I thought maybe they were whales at first. But a couple of them that traveled underneath the boat, it's impossible it could have been a whale. Impossible. And couldn't have been a submarine either.
That's exciting, and it is scary at the same time, Randy, isn't it?
All you can do is grab the side of the boat and hold our breath, and we look at each other like, what could that be? And, you know, I have never really been into, you know, weird stuff, but that has been the weirdest thing that I've ever come across, seeing these kind of things right off the coast in shallow water.
Right where you're talking about, Preston. Hey, thanks for your call, Randy. They're everywhere, aren't they?
They are, you know, it's not just off the California coast. So this is where I keep getting a lot of, you know, reports. I just got another email right now, literally, from a gentleman who's apparently listening to the show. And he's telling me about his sighting just off the north coast of California, in which they saw this very bright light come swooping down out of the sky. They said it was 20-foot diameter and crashed into the ocean. And actually, it slowly descended into the water. And about 10, 15 minutes later, as they were going back into their hotel, they watched it rise up out of the water and fly away.
See, the reports I get of those that smash out of the water, you know, it's an angle. It's almost like a 45-degree angle as opposed to coming straight up. They just seem to shoot out on the side.
You know, it's amazing the way these things can maneuver. That's something that, you know, I hear over and over again is the maneuverability of these objects. Many people think it'd be great fun to see a UFO, and suddenly you find one of these things under your boat or, you know, hovering right over your head, and suddenly it's not so funny. It's a little bit unnerving.
Well, these Topanga Canyon episodes in Topanga, what do you think they were?
That was the biggest intense wave that, you know, I've ever experienced and certainly investigated, and what exactly happened there is hard to say, but on the night of June 14th, 1992, I've got over 17 now, I think closer to 20 actually, independent witnesses throughout the canyon who saw extraordinary activity involving, you know, dozens even UFOs. And some of these people were actually abducted. And the most remarkable case, I think, is this couple who lived high on one of the highest points in Topanga Canyon, on Saddle Peak. And this overlooks the ocean and kind of overlooks the San Fernando Valley and West Los Angeles there. And it was about 8 o'clock at night that they started seeing these lighted objects coming up from below the canyon down towards the coast there. And they thought, you know, that's odd. What are these things? They're darting around. These aren't helicopters. Mm-hmm. And they saw like 10 come up. And about 15 minutes later, they watched another group of 10. And when it happened again, they started counting these things. And meanwhile, at this time, there are numerous people throughout the canyon being chased by objects up and down the road, and beams of light are being shined on them, or they're being woken up and out of their bedrooms. And this couple is watching all this happen. And they said another group would come up. And so after this was done, they watched it all night long. The wife said that there was about 200 objects. And the husband, he said, no, I don't think there was more than 100, which kind of always makes me laugh, because 100 or 200 objects, either way, this is a lot of UFOs. And my question is, where are these objects coming from? This is not just one or two UFOs. These will come, normally when someone sees a UFO, it starts out as kind of a star-like object in the sky, and it comes swooping down. These were coming up from below, from behind a canyon, which is, again, very down low to the coast and kind of a very rural area in Topanga State Park, actually.
Next up, we go to Cameron in Richmond, Virginia, on the wild card line. Cameron, it's all you.
Hey, George, I appreciate you having me on.
Thank you.
I had an experience about 10 years ago, and I'm 14. A buddy of mine, they owned his family owned a horse farm, and they boarded horses. So, I would spend a lot of weekends up there hanging out with them. And one particular evening, it was probably 2 or 3 in the morning, we were outside next to the field, petting some horses pretty late. And we heard it sounded like sizzling or like electricity sizzling, kind of almost like bacon frying in a pan. And we noticed a blue light. And as the sound increased, blue light increased. It wasn't coming from a particular point. It was mostly just all above us, but it wasn't encompassing the whole field. It was just right above us. And it got so loud, I remember it ringing my ears horribly. And, 2 or 3 seconds after that, it stopped and the light was gone and the horses jolted. And, I called my friend after hearing the show tonight about healing encounters, and I asked him, did you notice any healing, anything different? I'm listening to this show and pretty interesting stuff. He said, no, nothing with me. But, it's funny you should say that, because there was a horse that they were planning on putting down probably the next week or the next couple weeks. And for like a leg condition, I don't know if it was arthritis, the horse had arthritis, some joint condition the horse had. And they noticed that the horse was fine after that. And I didn't know if Preston had heard anything about, healing encounters with animals or anything. I thought it was interesting.
All right, healing encounter with animals. What do you think?
I've only got one, and it's one of those cases that you have to wonder whether or not it's legitimate. I certainly do know about one other case, but that's it. And that involves some people who went to attend one of those illegal rooster fights.
Yeah.
And, one of the animals goes to death. And that's exactly what was happening. This whole crowd was watching these two animals go at it. And one of them was pretty much dead at one point when this object appeared over the crowd, causing a huge pandemonium. And it sent on a beam of light, which struck one of the roosters and cured it. And it jumped up. It was fine. The object darted away, and that ended the whole, gathering.
Let's go to Bruce, Utica, New York. Hi, Bruce. Go ahead.
Hello, George. Hello, Preston. Thanks for having me on.
Sure thing.
For years, I've been fascinated with the Hopi Indian culture and their kind of traditional legends pertaining to how they traveled through outer space and UFOs and USOs. And recently, I guess they've even found, I vaguely heard that, archaeological evidence of an old Hopi Indian corpse, and they researched the bone marrow and found a remarkable semblance to what is actually kind of space or stardust And I'm wondering if there's any, if you could elaborate, Preston, on possibly any new archaeological studies to look for UFOs around New Mexico and areas where Hopis might have landed. I'm going to get off the phone line, but I'll take your answer on the air. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Where did they land?
That's a difficult question. I do know that the Hopis do have a long tradition of, you know, believing in the Star People and that they descended from them. And I'm certainly in contact with some Native Americans today who have had some really profound encounters in that regard, and still call the Star People their friends.
Well, they also talked a lot about Ant People.
I have heard that as well, and I think that there is a connection that, you know, with the Native Americans and the whole ETs. I think that they've got a connection that seems to, you know, be, I don't know, it's hard to say, but certainly I've uncovered some interesting stories about that. I don't know a lot about archaeology and the Hopi, you know, sites, but I do think it speaks to this whole issue that we've touched on a couple of times about, you know, who are we and how are we related to the ETs?
Right. How many states have you written UFOs over books about?
Started with UFOs over California, because that's where I was based. But then UFOs over New York, and just UFOs over New Mexico was released not too long ago.
Good for you. Have you done UFO over Missouri yet?
No, but I'll put it on the list.
It's up there. We're going to come back with final phone calls with Preston Dennett. Plus, I'm going to now add in ghost stories, your ghost stories.